Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's call on another Thursday night. There are no lawyers or judges or paralegals on this call. Therefore, there is never any legal advice. We don't give it. Wouldn't know how, don't know what it is, and don't have a license. So if you think you need legal advice, we suggest you find a bar card lawyer, pay him for some, and hope it's good. I don't mean to warn. So, however, I do have a strict policy that if you are on the call and you are not currently speaking and have the floor to speak, that you mute yourself because it is being recorded and the recording apparatus is rather sensitive. It picks up everything, even your background noise. So, yourself with your own mute button on your phone, or you can use 4-star to mute and 4-star to unmute. We like to start the call with good news and stupid lawyer moments. There it is. Kind of a delicious, stupid fire moment today. And it makes me very happy. I think I'll share it with everybody. I sent it to Dave earlier. As you all know, any of you have been on this call for any time, you know that back in 2015, the CFPB hammered Folio and Midland, Portfolio Recovery and Midland, which is owned by Encore, and separately, but at the same time, and they sued them for huge money. Well, we would consider huge money in the millions, and entered into a stipulated settlement agreement, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Debbie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't go back and read the 2015 rulings and settlement agreement today when this happened. But I think those last for like 10 years or something.
Yeah, I don't know what the length is, to be honest with you.
I think it's 10 years. And here we are in 2023. Those were entered into in 2015. Now, that happened when I was in the middle of the big lawsuit against Midland and Encore. And if some of you may not remember, but my mission, it was never about money. It was about accomplishing case law to establish once and for all that debt buyers are not and cannot ever be considered creditors or collectors. They are a third kind of beast. And I took it all the way to the 11th Circuit and won that, and it was established that there is more than two types of furnishers and two types of entities in regard to consumer debt. And it was established once and for all that the debt buyers are down the line buyers, basically, that they do not buy debt, they do not lend money, they do not make contracts to collect for someone else, so they cannot ever be considered creditors or collectors. They are a category unto themselves. And as that category unto themselves, they must do certain things if they want to exercise the right to collect balances on the portfolio spreadsheets that they purchase from creditors, which is all they get, fragmented data in a spreadsheet. They don't get any original account documentation. They don't get any accounting or ledger or anything. All they get when they make these so-called debt purchases is a spreadsheet full of, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 names, addresses, maybe social security number, complete or incomplete, maybe phone numbers, and who is an original creditor might have been, and a balance. And that's it. Information they get. And they pay pennies on the dollar for it. Well, what I established at the 11th is that they have to be able to prove up the original account and the amount that they're trying to collect. And in the CFPB's words and the 11th Circuit and mine, they must provide account-level documentation. And the CFPB went so far as to define what that means. Account, what is account-level documentation? Plus, the law says that they cannot sue somebody on an account that is past the statute of limitations for the state in which the debt originated. So if it was a credit card bill and someone lived in North Carolina, the statute of limitations on being sued on a defaulted credit card is 3 years here. Some states it's 6. There's 2 states where it's like 1 year, isn't it? Yeah. But if it's past that statute of limitation, they can try to collect it, but they have to inform the consumer that it's past the statute of limitations and they can't sue them. Now, in the past, before all this happened, and I said that these orders from the CFPB came down halfway through my case, wasn't finally adjudicated and written in stone until 2016. I began it in 2013. Well, actually, it was all ended in 17, but that all happened in the middle, and I used it very successfully against them. And there are a number of restrictions in there and certain information that they must give to the consumer. And one of the big things was that they had to cease buying up these portfolios and shotgun approach suing everybody in state courts. And it was quite a hefty settlement that first time around. I'm trying to remember. I think it says in here, let's see. Back in 2015, how much did they have to pay? It was, they had to pay $27 million in consumer refunds and penalties for the deceptive debt collection tactics they'd already used against people that the CFPB had established. Plus, they had to pay, it was $10 or $15 million just in a fine paid directly to the CFPB, and they had to sign this stipulated settlement agreement that they would not engage in collecting debts without a reasonable basis. They're not allowed to sell the debt they buy, resell it. They're not allowed to threaten or file collection lawsuits without being able to prove up the debt. They can't use false and misleading affidavits in debt collection actions. See, back in the day, they used to get an affidavit from the seller. Let's say, like the case that, my case, they bought a portfolio of old debt from T-Mobile, seven different T-Mobile companies, but nowhere in the spreadsheet did it indicate which one of the seven companies each of those line items even came from. There was no way to know, you know, and they were like seven different companies all under the umbrella of T-Mobile. And all it was names and other partial information and a balance. Well, it wasn't mine, and so I don't know where they got it. But it could have been somebody with my name. I know of several where they live, actually, with my same name. And who knows? Doesn't matter. They can't do that without proving it up. They've got to be able to do that. And then when they can't, because the contracts don't give them the right to do that, the contract, when they buy it with the portfolio, comes with a bill of sale. And the bill of sale will say on such and such a date, such and such a company purchased a portfolio of defaulted debt valued at blah, blah, blah. And then it says without recourse or warranty, meaning without any proof that any of it's valid. And that's what it says on the bill of sale. And then there's always this little affidavit attached to the bill of sale of some yahoo that works at that company, let's say T-Mobile. He might be the janitor, who knows. But it'll say that that person is warranting that, to the best of their knowledge, the spreadsheet portfolio is accurate. To the best of their knowledge, not even say who they are, what they do, who they worked for, and it would be impossible anyway. But that's the kind of affidavit that you always see when you get to discovery and make them fork over the documents they got in the sale, you know. So that's false and misleading representations and misleading affidavits in debt collection actions. And they've done this for 40 years, okay, but they can't do this crap anymore. So then, and collecting or suing on debt that was outside the statute of limitations. Well, they never stopped. They never slowed down. In fact, the ink wasn't even dry on that lawsuit from 2015 before they went right back to doing as they've always done. And portfolio was a little more careful, and I'll say a little more careful, than Midland and Encore have been about it, violating their agreement. They tried to hide it a little better, but they were still doing it. So finally today, well, it came to my email today, the CFPB got them again. And it's for, and they actually state, absolutely flouting and violating their agreement, and that they have never stopped their bad behavior, and it's listed exactly what they were doing, and in fact, they ramped it up. So now, they're going to have to pay, let's see, they got to pay $12 million to the consumers that they've harmed during this time since 2015 by its illegal debt collection practices. and another $12 million penalty that is going to be deposited into, and I didn't even know this existed, I don't know when they got this up, CFPB's Victims Relief Fund. I don't know anything about that. Must be fairly new. And portfolio violated by collecting on unsubstantiated debt and without proving required documentation and disclosures to consumers, suing and threatening legal action against consumers without offering or possessing required documentation. See, before they were just ordered by a settlement agreement by the CFPB to do that. But now, since my case at the 11th, the court says they have to. So it's bigger trouble. You know, it's not just the CFPB regulatory agency saying this is the rules and you broke the rules. Now they're violating case law in the 11th Circuit. So they have to pay... let's see how much they have to pay an additional fine. I know it says here somewhere. Oh, here we go. They will have to pay more than $27 million in consumer refunds and penalties for deceptive debt collection tactics. And misleading affidavits, blah, 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 blah. And then I can't remember if it was 10 or 15 million. It's here in the article somewhere. $12 million, which is just a fine for being bad boys. And that made my day. Because if they've busted portfolio on it, and I told you they're a little sneakier than Encore and Midland. Midland, they were flouting their violation before they even left the frickin' building that first time. So I look to see some more of this happening very, very soon, aimed at Encore. Now, I haven't seen one aimed at Sherman Industries yet. And I think the reason we haven't is that unlike Portfolio and Encore, Sherman Industries, which owns LVNV, Recovery Assets, a whole bunch of redheaded stepchildren, they're not publicly traded. A private company.
Yeah, so, Asset Acceptance is another.
No, that's owned.
Or no, that went to Midland, didn't it? That's right. Yeah.
Went to Midland. Midland owns Jefferson Capital, Asset Acceptance, the two Midlands, Credit Management, Midland Funding. They own a couple of mortgage ones. They own a bunch of shit. So does Portfolio. They have redheaded stepchildren too. But most of their collection action is done in their main, you know, company name. But the Sherman Industries, they own at least a dozen of subsidiary. And they're a lot sneakier. First of all, they're not publicly traded. And second, most of their redheaded stepchildren kind of have a dual purpose. They purchase the so-called defaulted debt, but they also do enough traditional third-party collection that they can hide behind the label of being called a collector. Because if you go into a contract with, say, Capital One to collect debts for them, and you get to keep a portion of what you collect, and then the creditor gets the rest. That's a traditional third-party debt collector. So they do just enough of that to be able to hide behind that label. So it makes it a little harder when people go after them to prove that in their case they were strictly acting as a debt buyer and not a debt collector, because, you know, supposedly the rules are different. Now, in actuality, it kind of depends on the state you live in, because right after the ruling of the 11th Circuit, we got a lot more than I was after in the first place. Number one, all I wanted was to get the buyers labeled with the correct label of what and who they really are, and establish parameters for what they can and cannot do under the law. Okay, I did that. But we did more, because the 11th Circuit ruled that there's not just three categories, there's four. There's debt buyers who are, let's say, the debt buyer buys a portfolio that goes up for sale for the first time. Let's say Citibank sells 3,000 defaulted credit cards in a spreadsheet, and they are, because they just can't collect it. You know, they finally decide they're never going to be able to collect it, so they write it off and they sell it, okay? So whoever they sell it to, they're considered a debt buyer. But if they buy a portfolio that was first sold to Midland and then sold to LVNV and then sold to Portfolio, that's a down-the-line buyer. And those are the bottom feeders. That's that fourth category, the junk buyers, junk peddlers. Well, now there's a number of states that happened a lot quicker than I ever expected. All of a sudden, states all over the country were using my case to force even creditors, not just debt buyers or junk buyers, but they were forcing the third-party collectors and the creditors that if they changed the law in North Carolina, even, if you want to sue somebody on a defaulted debt, you better attach that account-level documentation that proves up your claim 100% with the complaint, or the court will dismiss it. You can't even file it. And that happened in a lot of states. And a lot of courts started saying, well, we don't care if you're the original creditor or a debt collector or a debt buyer. If you can't prove it up with original documented proof of this debt, you are not suing this individual. And in other states, they leave it up to the consumer being sued to object. So they'll go in and they'll sue, and they know they can't sue because they can't prove it up. But the court doesn't have that rule that they have to attach it to the complaint, so they do it anyway. And then if the consumer doesn't step up and say, well, no, I object, move to dismiss on the grounds that they haven't proved it up. You know, they've got to produce account-level documentation. At that point, if they can't do it, then the court will kick it out. But one way or the other, it really has put a crimp in their style between what the CFPB did and what I did. So now the CFPB is coming down on them again with a major hammer, And apparently, like I said, they got a little sneakier, but not sneaky enough, right, Dave?
That's absolutely right. You know, they're always going to try and be sneaky, and they depend on the fact that most people, the great majority of people, are dumber than flies, have never read anything, and they sure haven't been on our calls, and so they don't go challenge it.
Yeah, what you said was so chopped up, the first half of it, I didn't get it.
Really? Can you hear me now?
I don't know what it was. I didn't go anywhere. I'm just still sitting in the same spot.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the bottom line is most people don't know to challenge things. Oh, well, yeah, I guess they got me, you know. And they don't show up. They don't argue it. They don't argue it in any way. Say, wait a minute, that's not my debt, so on and so forth. The most simple things that we teach on these calls, most people don't do that because they're uninformed. They never study. And, they end up getting judgments against them because they don't even show up in court. And then they start garnishing wages and your life goes downhill and so on and so forth.
But that's another detail that you just brought up, Dave. A number of states, my own included, where I live now, have tightened the restrictions quite a bit on the ability to garnish people's wages, bank accounts, etc., since all of this. Since the CFPB and since my case at the 11th, there have been a lot of different kinds of dominoes falling as a result of establishing that case law. And more people aware of what we do here, because don't think for a minute that just you're awakened and aware and educated because you attend these calls. Over the years, since 2011, since we've been doing all this, yeah, my list is massive, and I send out the recorded call information, documents, and the education that we share all this time, every week after the call, to a massive list of emails. But you have to figure that all those people that are getting that, even if they weren't on the call, and many of them are never on the call. We had some people who were very, very successful, and because of their work schedules and other things, were never able to attend a call. They had to rely on the recorded calls and learning the hard way by the examples and hard copy attachments I sent with email and links to other resources, etc. But they have their own little networks of people. They might have, I know that at least one person I send it to, she has a bigger network of email list that she regularly sends out to every single day, bigger than mine. So that's a huge amount of people who are getting the same patient. The only thing they're not getting that the people on this call take advantage of, and we commend you for it, when you attend a call, you get the opportunity to ask questions to the teachers, you know, and get the answers to your questions. Even if we don't know, we will try to point you to the proper place you can get the answer. And the people who don't attend the calls, they don't get that opportunity, other than if you're a member of Jesse's website and you take advantage of the forum where you can ask questions, you can get answers. But that doesn't mean that millions, literally millions of people are not aware now and of simple things like, wait a minute, you say you're going to sue me in state court? Well, I heard something about that. So-and-so sent me an email. I don't think they can do that. They might not know a lot, but they know enough to stop ignoring stuff. And these companies have admitted in public many times, and especially if you get your hands on the ones that are publicly traded, like Encore or Portfolio, Tail or some of the others that are publicly traded, they have to file, what do you call that?
10-K?
10-K, yeah. An SEC 10-K report every year. And they even state in their 10-K that it literally is just a numbers game. They'll say that they budget, let's say, $3 billion a year for the purchase of defaulted debt portfolios, and they expect to be able to collect 2-3% of that. They literally say it. They're counting on dumb bunnies not answering, you know, when they sue them. But now those profits have taken a dive because of what we've done collectively, not just what I did at the 11th. And these various states have tightened their belts and their laws and their regulations and the courts. The courts are very happy when they don't have to be inundated. Their dockets aren't just stuffed overflowing with these billing debt collection lawsuits with these companies like Midland and Portfolio using the court as a third arm debt collector. The courts have never appreciated that. And they like it a whole lot when there's a way that the judge can say, oh, no. Nope, dismissed. We're not going to hear this one. You don't even have any documentation attached to it, and throw it out before it gets anywhere. And the consumer doesn't even have to respond. The courts like it just fine when it's like that, because they don't like being overwhelmed with all this. We're talking state courts here, no federal.
So, yeah, they have to sue you in state courts. But we use federal courts to go after them.
Then it gets a lot more expensive for them. And, you know, that whole exercise and five-year trip I went through, I found that in form of papyrus. So the filing fees weren't even out of my pocket. There was no actual money that had to be spent until we got to the appeals court, and that had to be paid. I forget, and I had help with that. I didn't have it. I think it was, what, $510 or something?
Yeah, $500 or $550 or something like that for a circuit court.
Just appeal. A filing fee. Yeah, I had to go through a hell of a lot of ink and paper, and I got help with that too. Thank God, I never made it. Switched me over to a laser so I get 3,000 copies to a toner disc instead of 150. The ink is just prohibitively expensive in an inkjet printer to be doing this kind of paper war shit. unless you have deep pockets. So, you know, but there's ways to get around that. I had nothing when I filed it. But again, it wasn't after the money. Now, did I make them pay me half the money? Oh, I was quite happy when it was over. They weren't getting out of it. Chicken feet are free. But that wasn't a mission. And now look where we are. Because I went on that mission. Dave was on a different mission. And Jesse was on missions with mortgages and stuff. And John was on the FDCPA missions. We all had our different missions we were on. But we were helping each other along the way while we were engaged in those different missions, which ultimately were being engaged in. The journeys were being taken by us for the benefit of all the people in this nation, not us. And yeah, we got paid for our work, not by the people that we're doing it for to benefit it, but by the perpetrators. We weren't letting them get off scot-free. It wasn't just about the mission. We did make them pay us. But it wasn't for our own gratification or financial
gain. Well, now I'm going to say part of mine was financial gain. But as much to penalize them for their illegal activity.
Right. We did get financial gain, and we knew when we went into it. Like Dave just said, there were a lot of them that we filed where we just went after statutory damages, okay, which is, like if it's FCRA, it's $1,000, up to $1,000 per violation. FDCPA, it's $1,000. That's all you can get out of the case for each defendant. TCPA is different amounts, you know. And so you know going into it, that plus your cost is the most you're going to get out of it. And maybe that's all you need, and you are doing it because they pissed you off, they violated you, and you could use a couple $1,000 in your pocket. You know, and we did get paid. There's no doubt about it. We didn't do it just for... We're not philanthropists. You know, 100%.
Well, I can tell you that... Portfolios checks clear the bank.
Yes, they do.
So do Midlands and many other companies.
All of them. Collectively, our group and our central team members, I don't think they're... Well-known names that we haven't collected from.
There aren't too many out there that one of us didn't collect from, but there's a bunch of them out there that a number of us each collected from.
Right. You know, now you have to keep in mind there's over 400 debt buyers at last count. There's only a handful of the big boys at the top, and all the lesser ones, they're true bottom feeder, down the line buyers, and it's very easy to make them run away and drop their BS because they don't even know how to fight it. They don't have the financing. They don't have the deep pockets that companies like Folio and Midland, Sherman Industries, LVNV, and those guys have in order to fight a federal suit. Okay. So when you fight back against one of those little boys, they just don't have the budget to fight you. And they might give you a little bit of an argument when you first go after them. They might actually sue you in a state court. And then once they realize, most of the time, when they realize, uh-oh, this isn't going to be, you know, the one of those 1 or 2% that we're going to actually collect from.
Yeah.
They'll drop the suit and go away.
Yeah, did I bite off more than I can chew this time?
Yeah, because it is a numbers game, even at their level.
Yep.
And for them, even more so, actually, because they don't have deep pockets. The fight, we set out to fight, and we have for the last couple years, is at the high levels. That's one of the reasons we only fight this fight in federal court. We want it to cost them. We want it to be difficult for them. Difficult as we can make it.
Yeah, and we made it difficult for some people.
Yeah.
I can tell you Midland didn't like me at all.
After
of course, I sued him over 100 times.
Well, you know they didn't like me. Both law firms.
Yeah.
Declared as a judge, they don't ever want to hear my name again.
Yeah.
Gee, that's unfortunate. Too bad.
Yeah. Well, and then one of my adversaries, Miss Witch, that wanted to give me a bunch of crap, and I...
And that's a level of an attorney.
Yeah, and I nailed her. And she met her demise several years ago. So she's not even around to pester people anymore. But she was a pain. She was an arrogant lawyer.
Yeah, there was a particular one out of Florida. You know, we had to ultimately mop the floor with. And that, thankfully, that was Brian that finally mopped the floor with his head.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's been different ones.
Mm-hmm. And the one that I had to deal with, she... And unfortunately, I actually liked her. As far as her personality and as a person. But she was green. Green as the grass. And very young. And as I have always pointed out, females are born with claws. And we spend the first half of our lives sharpening those claws on each other. And the rest of our lives we sharpen them on you guys, the men. But we never stop sharpening our claws.
Yeah.
And so a young cat, especially a young female cat, should never go claw to claw with a granny cat. And she was out of her league. I remember I had a nickname for her. I was called her Twizzy.
Yeah.
She had a personal hurdle. She was not comfortable in her own skin. And I could manipulate and use that against her in very subtle but effective ways. And that's what I mean by claws. Something I normally would not do to another person or another woman. But in the legal arena, you're fighting these, and she wasn't ethical by any means.
No, she was arrogant, though.
Yeah, and when you're fighting unethical attorneys, the rules, personal rules and decorum is right out the window. You know, I might not ever behave in that subtle fashion toward another woman in ordinary life, but the gloves were off, and I did not spare her in any way. So in the end, it got yanked. The case got yanked out of her hands. She was not happy about it at all. And then I had to stick the knife in just a little bit. and twist it just a little bit as a goodbye the day that she told me, well, I'm not going to have this case anymore. And I'm like, really? What do you mean? Well, Balch and Bingham Law Firm, they're taking over. King and Spalding won't be handling it anymore. And I'm like, well, why not? And she said, I have no idea. And it wasn't my idea. And I said, well, you know, that's a shame because I am such a joy to work with. I thought she was gonna choke to death. I said it so serious. And then I called her Keisha. And she doesn't want anybody to know that's her name. She doesn't go by that name.
Yeah.
I just had to, you know, twist it in there a little bit.
Yeah.
Since it would be my last opportunity. But, you know, you have to pay attention to your adversary and identify their weaknesses. And don't be afraid to exploit those weaknesses against them because they're going to use yours.
Yeah. That Miss Witch that I had to deal with, she had a reputation as being a really good lawyer on the collector side. Really good. She was ruthless. She was dishonest. She was unethical. But she also put in a motion to have me deemed a vexatious litigator. She thought that was going to stop me. Guess who won and guess who lost?
Exactly.
I took her to the cleaners before the court, and the judge told her straight out, forget it.
Well, the same thing kind of happened with Setboy from Baltimore, Bingham. So the judge calls a conference, and he flat out to the judge's face, who flat out lies to him. And I pipe up, Your Honor, could I clarify that something here? Well, of course, Mrs. Hinkle, what is it? Well, actually, he does have that case law because I sent it to him last week.
Oops.
And actually, his client is aware of cases, latest one being out of Northern California, that state they have to turn over the original contract. And I said, of course, he knows about that because he had just lied to the judge and said, I'm sure my clients aren't aware of that. No, I never heard of that. And I said, actually, Your Honor, it was against his client in the Northern District of California just last month on February 7th. And they not only had to turn him over, they had to turn over all the originals unredacted.
Yeah, they tried to do it redacted, but that didn't work.
Right, blatantly busted him for flat out to the judge's face lying to him. And I said, I gave him all that last week. He has it. Knew he had it right in his hand. He had it right in front of him. And he lied to the judge. But if you don't do your research, if you don't know your opponent as well as you can, find out everything you can about him, and everything you can about the issue that's going to be before the court, whether it's just a small discovery hearing like that was or an actual trial, those lawyers are going to lie to those judges right to their faces and get away with it because you can't speak up and say, well, now, Your Honor, that's not exactly true.
Yeah.
Because here it is, and he has it. Judges don't like to be lied to, especially by the attorneys. Well, they're used to being lied to by, you know, defendants. Because nobody's going to get accused of something and stand up there and go, okay, well, you got me. How long do I have to go to prison? It would make life a lot simpler for the judges if they did. Of course, you wouldn't need judges if they did. So that's really, really important. Good lessons to learn, but that's my good news. The CFPB has hammered Portfolio again for the same bad behavior. And boy, they'll be watching them like chicken hawks now.
Well, hopefully that moves the end of the consent agreement out another 10 years.
It probably will.
I think it probably refreshes it.
Yeah, I think that's part of the original agreement. I have to go back and read it. The stipulated agreement.
Yeah.
We have used that so much, and we have recommended so many times to others to use it. Because it didn't matter that it came out in 2015.
Not at all. Nope.
I mean, you look at one of the most important rulings out of the Supreme Court in the history of the United States that is still being used on a regular basis today is Marbury versus Madison in 1803. And that establishes that Congress can make no law that is repugnant to the United States Constitution. If they do, and it is repugnant or in violation of the United States Constitution, it is null and void on its face. And that's Marbury versus Madison, 1803. So it doesn't matter how old it is, if it hasn't been rescinded and replaced by a different law, you know, a different ruling by the Supreme Court, then it's in effect, regardless of when it was ruled on. So, once again, this is why history should be one of your favorite subjects, especially American history. I like all
now,
of it.
Now, something that hasn't been taught in the schools for 30 years.
Oh, you can bet no kid graduating high school now, unless their mom and daddy tell them, or a smart aunt and uncle or somebody, they're never going to hear of Marbury versus Madison. Or a number of other cases as well.
Yeah,
they're not taught anything about even how our judicial, our governmental system is supposed to work. I mean, that was so depressing. There was one of the TV hosts that was, I think it was Jesse Waters, quite a while back when he used to do the on the street thing, and he'd just go up and ask young people and, you know, random people questions on the street. And I remember him asking, I think he was in New York at the time, and he was going down the street and he was just picking random people, mostly young people. It might have been in a college town. But anyway, he was just going up and talking to them and asking them, what are the three branches of government? That was one of his questions. And not a single one of them could name executive, legislative, and judicial. Their answers were so ridiculous. It was like, let's see, president, vice president, and attorney general. They didn't even know the branches of government.
That's the way the powers that be want it. I want people dumber than a box
of
dirt.
Well, and then, you know, you might as well not ask, well, okay, no, that's not true. We actually have the judicial, the legislative, and the executive. So what are the jobs of each of those? There's not a tinker's chance in hell that question's going to get answered. The only thing they're going to know, well, they make laws and arrest you if you don't follow them. Well, that's not true either. But that's the level of what people are taught in school in the last two generations for sure. You know, they're just not taught. That's civics. They don't teach civics anymore.
Well, and it's not by accident. That's the worst part of it.
Well, instead they teach communism under the guise of a different name of civics and replaced it with social studies. That's communism and socialism, straight up. Instead of civics. You know, it's not the school. That's where parents really screwed up. It has never been the job of teachers in public school to teach social values of any kind to our kids. And attitudes and what to think. They're supposed to be teaching our kids how to think, not what to think. And we didn't speak up about that, and I didn't realize they weren't teaching the civics until my son was already in the last couple of years of high school. So I taught it. I taught it at home, and my daughter definitely got taught. Haley definitely gets taught, but that's because I'm doing it. So anyway, anybody have any good news, stupid lawyer moments, or questions to ask? Quiet. Believe it or not, I'm sitting here with the front door open. Because it's over 70 degrees outside. I didn't hear Dave say he's doing the same thing. Are you there, Dave?
Well, it was about 80 here today, and, you know, cloudy. We're supposed to have rain tomorrow, but
I was going to go for a ride today because it was 75, but it had been raining for a few days, and the sun would come out, and then the clouds would come back, and it kept threatening to rain. I thought, man, it's warm enough. I don't want to go out there and get caught in the rain, so I didn't go. I wasn't in the mood to get soaked.
Oh, there'll be another day.
Well, it was beautiful, though. Yeah, 75 degrees, and I spent most of it outdoors. Because I didn't need to get wet on my veranda, you know.
Yep.
I didn't even go sit in the hot tub. Because it wasn't cold enough to want to go sit in the hot tub. Okay, anybody got anything to discuss or questions to ask? Speak up now.
Quiet bunch tonight.
Check and see if anything came through that needs to be discussed there. It's a real clown show going on between New York and Florida now.
Yeah.
Kind of enjoying that.
Yeah, the Alvin Bragg scenario in New York isn't going so well for them. Oh, Trump's going to be indicted. Grand jury's been canceled. Who'd have thought? Yeah, the political scene's getting crazy. But
well, it was they knew that the charges would never stick because they made up a law that doesn't even exist.
Well, exactly.
Trying to
there's no violation.
Twist the wording of a couple of misdemeanors that even if he had done it, which he didn't, are past the statute of limitations to begin with. They knew that. They knew it would never go anywhere. But that's not why they were going to do it. They were going to do it for the shock and awe factor, show up with helicopters and SWAT teams and do what they did to Roger Stone, but do it out in the middle of the day with all the major media lined up ahead of time to make a big spectacle out of it. And then Trump countered them and came out and made the announcement that they were going to be doing that next week. And so they could never get away with that. It just
he also arranged. Yeah, he also arranged to have his own camera crews and everything there to capture everything.
Exactly. So they were going to try to turn it into a major J6, which also never happened the way they said. You know, I was watching what the hell happened that day. Anyway, he just destroyed their whole plan. You know, they can't do. That's the only reason they were going to do it was for this movie production, you know, just like they tried to turn J6 into with fake stuff. But now that's not going to work, so what's the point in an indictment that isn't going to go anywhere and the lawyers will deal with, and it's not even good enough to make the news? And what it definitely is not good enough for is the major distraction that the movie would have been. They're about to have the hammer down on their heads, and they need some big-time distraction right now. But they're not going to get it. Not like that, they won't. So what are they going to try next? Before they run out of time.
Hard telling, really is.
Yeah, you never know. They're gonna pull Blue Beam out of the pocket in a big way. I know they'll have to, and they're getting pushed to the limit, right to the edge on that one. If they don't try to pull that out pretty damn quick, and they're not going to be able to at all. But I've seen them ramping it up a lot in the last 2 months. So I know they know that isn't going to work either. But what else have they got? People aren't even paying attention now when they say, oh, there's another pandemic coming, there's this fungus, or Warburg, or not Warburg, what do you call that stupid virus they want to threaten everybody with?
Monkeypox?
No, not monkeypox. Marburg. Yeah. Ebola, you know, I mean, whatever. No, nobody listens to him anymore because we know. Enough of the people know now. We're not falling for it a second time. And we're not going to offer ourselves up to the slaughter or our kids and our family members. It's just not going to happen. And we're not going to let you lock us down. And if you close the schools, fine. We're yanking them out anyway. So I see homeschooling co-ops popping up everywhere.
Yeah. There's a whole lot more homeschooling going on now than there ever has been in the history of the country, other than in the days before they didn't have schools. But.
Right, before Benjamin Franklin started the first public school. Oh, yeah, they've done it to themselves, and I just love it. I love to watch the counter moves. It's such a brilliant chess player. I just, oh my God. People lost their queen a long time ago, and they're just watching their king get slashed. They just won't give up, but if they do, they know where they're headed anyway. They're going to be held accountable, all of them. So it really is survival. So they can't give up. But they have to beat that dead horse until there's no meat left. I hate that analogy.
Really?
But it's true.
Doesn't sound pleasant at all.
No. You know, I just because I needed a chuckle and I was in the mood to watch a movie last night, I watched a fairly recent one that was so funny. And I usually didn't realize it was a flat-out comedy. And it does have very heartwarming messages to this movie, and I really did enjoy it. But I found myself just laughing out loud, and I rarely do because most of the comedies just flat-out funny. But it was called We Have a Ghost, and that was just the cutest damn movie. Just loved it. And, of course, it's sad at the end, but it's good at the end because the ghost gets to finally walk into the light, you know. But then he leaves everybody who really attached to him. It was really worth the watch. And it was called We Have a Ghost. No, it's about this black family that buys an old, old house. They wreck the house because the father fails at everything he does. And he's always looking for the get-rich-quick thing instead of, you know, going for the long haul and doing it right. And he keeps letting everybody down, and so they keep having to move. And they buy this house. It's a horrible, horrible house. And this ghost is in the attic. The middle son is only like 16. And he goes up in the attic, and this ghost tries to jump out and scare him and do the whoo thing at him. And the kid just starts cracking up. He's got his cell phone in his hand. He's videoing the whole thing. And then what does he end up doing? The dumb kid, he puts it up on YouTube. Well, that just starts the whole ball rolling. Goes viral from there. And then his dad gets involved and says, this will be it. We can really cash in on this one. We've got a real ghost. And then the government gets involved, of course.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was cute. You know, I recommend watching it with your kids. Something you can watch with your kids without any subtle crap being taught to them. Or in your face crap being taught to them. Pretty much they're not too subtle about it anymore. But that one is, I would call, a good family movie. All right, anybody else?
Doesn't sound like there's any takers tonight.
Well, I am not allergic to ending things early.
Yeah, I've got some things I need to get done.
I've got
get a little more of a jump on it before bed.
A couple of podcasts I need to catch up on for the last couple of days because I've been busy getting stuff done.
Yep.
I did the Easter for the kids because they're going on a Caribbean cruise, so they'll be gone over Easter. And Grayson's only almost three, so he doesn't know the difference whether it's Easter Sunday or it isn't. You know, so we had his Easter egg hunt a couple days ago. And it's a good day. It's a good thing we chose that day because it was sunny and it rained. We had planned to do it on Wednesday, but the way things worked out, we just changed our plans and did it on Tuesday. Good thing. Because on Wednesday, it rained all day, and we wanted to do it outside. So it worked out good. What's that?
Sorry. I'm sorry. I thought you were done. It's Sheila. I have a half an item when you're ready.
Yeah, you sound like you've got a wash rag over the microphone.
Oh, I just moved my hand. Is it that way?
Could have been.
Okay. After a long search, and I've been so frustrated, I think I found an attorney. But it's not all confirmed yet. I called the office. I was going through a list of referrals, and I was coming up dead end because of my situation. It's very, a lot of moving parts to it. My biggest explanation that was clear was a copy of my New Hampshire Banking Department complaint, because it has a full timeline on it. The first page is actually the form that you fill out, you know, on their website. And then they say if you need more, just attach, you know, pages to the complaint. Well, mine's for...
Basically, you're going after the banks, and you don't find too many attorneys that really want to go after banking law, whatever it is.
Yeah, right. Well, there was one firm, the one that I called before, this small firm. I was really shocked that they turned me down. I thought for sure these people were going to take it on because I've looked at some of their lawsuits, and they actually sued the Department of Banking one time and won for the client. So I thought, oh, okay. I'm not looking to sue those people, but, you know, I mean, they understand the banking laws and all that. But these people said no. And I thought, I don't know why. I can't read too much into this. I just have to keep pressing on. And, you know, maybe they had a situation after doing that that they just said, we're not going down that road anymore. You know, you never know. You never know, right?
It could have been, even though they won, it could have been a hellacious battle.
It would have been a hellacious battle, exactly. So this is really weird how I came across this guy. I had been looking up something, one of the New Hampshire laws. You know, I was doing a little bit of familiarizing myself with the tort laws and all that stuff because I know my situation is going to have all tort throughout it. It's going to have, like, tort of fraud. Let's see, what's the other one? Extortion, theft by extortion. I think they may be able to pull in, what's that one that's kind of common with consumer law stuff? Excuse me, it's called intrusion upon seclusion. I don't know if you've ever read. Yeah.
Yep.
You're minding your own business and going along your merry way, and then somebody jumps into your credit report that has no right to be there. I guess that's the only thing I can think of that would be, because I did read up on intrusion upon seclusion. I said, oh, well, maybe not. But then I said, well, electronically, you know, they pulled my credit report early in the year before I ever got my first letter from them in July of 2016. So I'd have to sell that one probably, but... the weird thing is, because, like I said, I had been looking up in New Hampshire.
Well, remember, they have there is permissible purpose for them to do that if, and only if, it is in preparation to file a lawsuit against you.
And they were not doing that because I was the one that petitioned the court at the superior level.
And they had no, and that's clear cut. Right. They had no permissible purpose.
Right, and they did it in early 2016. So, I mean, the statute of limitation is out on that, I guess. But
yeah.
I would I still would like to have it brought up in the complaint that these, because they're doing it to everybody. And they're just
right.
doing illegal activity.
Well, you know, there's nothing to bar you from using it in an argument as a factual mm-hmm. statement.
Yep.
The only thing you can't do is make it part of the counts.
Right.
That you're
remedy.
Suing for.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
the fact that they did it, statute of limitations or not, a fact is a fact that doesn't go away. You can still use it.
Yeah.
As a foundation.
I guess
your foundation, you know.
Right. I guess I cleared all that up because I said, you know, there may be a time when I'm going to ask Terry just for a quick refresher, you know, to give me the confidence. But I already, I called this. What happened was I had my laptop on and I went over to it to check my email. And I had left, you know, one of my search engines open. I use Safari now, so I think it was like the second or third hit on the list, you know, because I had been looking something up, was this law firm. And that's weird. I didn't search for any law firms, you know. And about, well, you know how AI technology is, but these laptops, phones, you name it, my iPad, it's all being listened to. And the AI is picking up on your searches and your conversations with people on the phone because my stuff is all networked together. So, but anyway, about the second or third hit on the list was this firm. And I thought, and I sat there and I kind of looked at it and I said, well, that's interesting. You know how when something is pulled up in the search and you get those, it's like you see the first couple of sentences of the website. So there was just enough information there, and I thought, well, I'm going to click on that for a second.
It's just like a little hook.
You know? Well, it said this man was a former prosecutor, federal prosecutor. So I said, what is that? So I opened it up, and sure enough, he's got a firm where I live. He's got a firm in the South. And so I sat on that for about 3 weeks, and then I called the other day. Because I had already got the no from that other firm that I was a little bit surprised about, and I still have one more to go if I need it. So the lady was super nice. You know how when you call, I know that's not like a selling point, but you know how it is when you call anywhere, I don't care where it is, and you know that that person is listening, like they have your, you know, what you're saying. You have their undivided attention. Just for
right,
some
thinking it, they're actually listening.
Yeah, because I called a few other ones, and I'm like, are these people multitasking while I'm trying to, like, explain probably, apart from giving birth to my son, the most important thing and event in my life? So this lady, you know, I tried to be as succinct as I could, because I know a lot of these people are either clerical or maybe, paralegals, but a lot of them are, you know, secretaries and clerks and stuff. So I told her, and then she said, I will pass your information on to attorney so-and-so. Well, that's one of the partners. And I said, oh, ma'am, I'm not trying to be picky or, insult you or anything, but I really would like to speak to the other attorney, you know, and I mentioned his name. And she said, oh, yeah, sure. I said, because his background is really more like what I want to talk to. I never talked to a prosecutor in my life. This guy used to be a federal prosecutor. He lived in Washington, D.C. and worked for the government. So, yeah. So all this time in the past couple of years, almost 2 years, I've been thinking, well, what I need is a big name firm, like maybe a very well-known one here in New Hampshire. or one from Boston. I have checked a few out down there. And every time I got a no from them, they kept referring me to the Massachusetts bar, and I'm like, the New Hampshire bar sucks. I'm not even going to go there because I'm just so frustrated with right now with the New Hampshire bar. But they haven't heard the last from me. When my stuff from the banking commissioner and they nail that law firm for aiding and abetting, I'm going right down there in person, and I'm going to insist on a face-to-face meeting. I'm going to fill out a complaint there, you know, the grievance, and I'm going to ask who is going to be sending this up to the New Hampshire Supreme Court, to the disciplinary board, because I want to know before I leave here. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be a bitch, but I'm direct about it. I'm just saying, let's just talk turkey here. You know, I know how this process goes. All right. So anyway.
Well, there's different levels and ways to be a bitch.
Yeah. Sometimes I just like one. So, you know, I can feel it oozing out of my pores. It's like, here it comes. So.
Exactly. That's when my twin gets loose.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like the other half, you know, of the personality.
That Gemini twin, I don't let her out very often because she's so hard to get back on the leash. But, you know, look out if I do.
My best friend was a hot-headed Scorpio, and that was my dad. And I learned quite a bit on how to keep a spine erect while you're arguing with him. So, but anyway, what was I going to say? So anyway, she took my information. She said she would pass it along to the attorney of my choice. And she called me back in an hour and she said, we can give you an appointment tomorrow at 1:00. Would you like to accept that? I said, I sure would. And so, sure enough, like at 1 minute of the hour, he called me, and so we were on the phone. But the thing is, she had asked me to send my most recent paperwork of concern, and so I did. And I thought he was going to review it before the appointment, and he didn't. So I was a little bit disappointed at that because he was firing off all these questions to me, and I'm like, holy shit, I need to get my timeline out. That's 4 pages long that I submitted to the banking department because he's asking me for all these dates that happened 5 years ago, and I don't remember the exact date. You know, I remember if it was summer, spring, or fall, and what year, but I'm like, blah, you know, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of choking on my answers. I said, I know the answer to this. It's just that the timeline and the amount of events was quite numerous, so right now, but whatever. I got through it. The first half an hour, he was so intense. I was like talking just like this by the second half an hour. I was like, I have never had anybody beat me down like this guy. He told me, he goes, I'm very direct. I said, I can tell. I wanted to say, you haven't met me yet, okay? So, you know, because I do have to really, really apply myself because it doesn't come naturally. Like I said, I'm a Libra and I'm really laid back and I get along with pretty much everybody. But I have just enough of me that when I've been treated like a rug after, you know, living through what I've lived through in my life, I just don't put up that shit anymore. I just don't. So anyway, I thought, oh, let's not get off to the wrong start here, but I was like, all right, Sheila, chill out. So, I mean, don't personalize this. He's going to be possibly representing you on a very important matter. And so the second half, now we're...
And you want to be able to work with him.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I can. I mean, Richard's gone now, and I said, I said to myself, I can't expect everybody to treat me the way Richard did because he would call me right back. He would answer the phone most if he wasn't in a meeting. That was my number. He never made me wait. You know what I mean? It's like, I said, this guy's not my personal friend. So, but,
yeah,
you know.
You can't let that experience spoil you.
I did tell him. I said, look, I've spent like the past close to 2 years thinking like when I was ready to pull the trigger on this in a civil manner, that I would need a big name law firm so that when that first letter goes out and they get that address and they know who this firm is, they're a little bit shaking in the boots. I said, but I keep coming up with dead ends, and then for some reason your name came up in my search engine. I clicked on it, and then when I read your bio, I said, holy crap, maybe this is the person I need, maybe this person I definitely need to talk to, you know, just to scratch it off the list or add it to the list or whatever I do. I said, and I, you know, because I told him, I said, I'll be quite frank about it. I was not expecting to go to a small firm with a, you know, somebody that just hangs a shingle out front. I just wanted to have that big name that looks like, oh, my God, she definitely lawyered up. But you know what, Terry? I'm going to send you that link to this guy. If when they open that up and they read his background, that's going to be enough to say, wow, you know, because he was a federal
prosecutor. You know, sometimes the big boys break away from the big boy club and start their own little private big boy club, which has every bit as much, maybe more, clout because they are not restricted like the bigger firms restrict their associates, you know.
Right, we do restrict them so much. And the other thing, too, with a big firm, I have a friend that has worked with a big firm here where I live, and she said I would wait sometimes 2 weeks for a return phone call, and I'm like, oh, no, we can't, I don't have, I'm patient, but I don't know if I had to have that kind of patience. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know? 2 weeks? What? That's ridiculous. So, anyway, he left for vacation for 2 weeks. He said, I want to do some, he said, I am very interested in this. Well, first, during the interview, I guess I call it that, he says to me, in your research and everything that you've been doing in the last few years, have you noticed if any other attorneys have taken this company to court for the same issues in other states? I said, I couldn't find anything, but I also do not have access to all those state courts. But the way I am guessing to answer this is if they did and they connected the fact that there's a disconnect between the Department of Banking laws and the state laws for foreclosure, I said, if an attorney had done what I would like to do, I think that that would have shut this guy down for business because I think it would spread other districts. You know, but I might be wrong because I, you know, maybe I'm not answering this right, but I don't think, you know, not that I know of. And I said, the big thing that I want to tell you is whoever takes this, whether it's you or someone else, I'm telling you right now, you don't know me from Adam. I don't know you. I have been on this since 2016. And in both 2019 and then again in 2020, when I found all those orders on the website for the New Hampshire Banking Department and finally was able to reverse engineer my complaint. You know, because I started writing down the laws that were similar, like, oh, yeah, they violated me on that one. And, oh, yeah, they, you know what I mean? And then I went back to the laws and read them and said, oh, yeah, they definitely violated those. So I start, you know, that's how I made out my complaint. And I did a really good job with that complaint, I think. So, but anyway, I said, the first thing I want to tell you is this guy is on YouTube singing like a canary and bragging on himself. And I said, any lawyer that is willing to take this on for me to represent me, first of all, I'm going to feed you a lot of information that I've been researching. Secondly, you can do whatever you want with discovery because that's what I'm hiring somebody to do it the right way instead of just me half-assed. But there's a lot of answers that I can answer for you that you do not have to waste a discovery question trying to get the answer from because I've already been making lots of notes. and I've actually transcribed a few of those videos. He said, interesting. He said, let me ask you this. When you filed your complaint with the Department of, you know, New Hampshire Banking Department, he said, did they ever contact you for more information? I said, nope. I gave them everything they needed from day one, my paperwork that was all attached to my complaint. Every allegation that I gave them in my timeline, I gave them supporting documents. And I said, my stack was at least 3/4 of an inch thick, if not more, towards an inch. I said, they never contacted me for anything. They had everything they needed. You know, I mean, I was like, here we go. We're going to pour on the secretary skills right now and give them everything they need. So that's what I did. And he said, interesting. Well, by the end of it, he said it to me twice during this hour. He said, well, I'm excited. I need to go through your paperwork that you sent me, and then I'm going to do a little bit of research of my own. He said, and when I come back from my vacation, we will circle back and have another phone call and discuss things. So I haven't got a confirmation from him yet, but when he hung up the phone, he said, second time, I'm excited. And he said, I love this David and Goliath stuff. This is right up my alley. That's what he said.
That's encouraging. Yeah.
That was encouraging.
Yeah.
I was so excited when he heard him say that. I was like, you know what? That's a great description. I never thought of that. We got to slay the dragon. That's what I was saying. But, you know, he's done this type of stuff before where he's gone in. He's done cases.
Yeah, his background tells you that.
He's done cases in many states and all over the United States. He asked me, he said, have you read any of my cases? I said, I have to admit to you, no. I said, and it's not because I didn't want to. I'm taking care of my mother.
You just found him.
I said, I opened up your website and read your bio, and that was all I needed to know. I swear to God, normally I would go in there and dig to read a little bit, you know, if I can find it. And I thought of it after I got off the phone with him. I said, oh, shoot, I should have told him I have a Pacer account and I would make an attempt to do that, you know. But I didn't, because I'm pretty busy with my mother right now. So she got out of the hospital, and I've been rehabbing her myself here at the house. So anyway, so that's where I'm at with that. And hopefully, I'm hoping that it will maybe work out for me. So, because I think I like him. I mean, I still have to, I know he's reserving judgment on me, and I just have to also reserve a little bit of judgment on him until we talk turkey about contract and then take this on. And I did tell him, I said, I've been looking for somebody that will take this on contingency. I said, because let me tell you something. there's quite a bit of problems with the way this company does business, and this will take, and this is going to make a dent in an industry that propped up after 2007-2008. And the other thing that I'm concerned about, Terry and Dave.
Well, you want somebody, too, who is going to be every bit the bulldog with a bone that you are.
Yeah. I said that to my girlfriend, Terry, my friend here in New Hampshire. I said, I need a kick-ass dude. I've wanted a man. Sorry, girls out there, I'm a girl, but I've wanted a male lawyer. That's what I wanted. And if I found this person, I am not 100% sure yet.
Well, you already have the fact that you're a female, and they're not going to respect you anyway for that reason. And that's already a factor. So why would you want to double that factor by having a female attorney? I think
I don't want any toxic femininity in threaded throughout any of what I'm about to do. I don't want to, put it on pause, stick it over there. I'll get back to that later. You know what I mean? I have to deal with that daily, it seems, you know, no matter where you are. So
yeah.
Even watching something on TV. It's like, oh, God, there it is again. But
I agree with you on that.
I want all business. And I think you're going to get that more with a man than you are anyway else. I don't know. There's a lot of really good female attorneys, too. In fact, my favorite judge that I dealt with right here in New Hampshire was a female because she was no bullshit. Straight up. She follows the rules. Boom. You know what I mean? Like these other ones were litigating from the bench, these men and stuff. And I'm like, what's going on here? They did it to me twice. But she was all business, that lady. I really liked her. So, but anyway, so that's that for now anyway. Saturday, I woke up. I was a little hesitant on Saturday. I was like, oh, I don't know. And then Sunday I was like, no, this is going to be fine. You know? I think it was because he was so, I mean, I was screwed up for about 4 hours after that call. I was like, I'm glad I don't have to, like, you know, meet anybody tonight and talk to them or whatever, because I am wasted. I am, like, emotionally wasted from this guy. He was so intense. And he told me that. He says, I am very direct and I am very intense. And I thought to myself, that's exactly what I need. I need a bulldozer to just go right in the middle. And I'm going to help
you.
You not only want
the dog with the bone, but you want the one who knows how to get at the marrow.
The vicious
right
one that tears their teeth. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, this is going to take big people down. And you know what? When these accounts get sold off, this guy buys them through what he calls a trade desk. I guess Dave would know what that is.
Yep.
You know, Dave, you know, we've talked about this in the past where the bank does the triple dip, you know, where they put it on your credit report and then they write it off for their taxes, you know, like they're going to write that account off because they're trying to recoup any amount, even if it's pennies on the dollar for these accounts. So I've been thinking all along, do these yahoos that are just street urchins like myself, do they have the right to buy those? Even if they form an LLC and make themselves look like a company, do they legitimately have the legal right to buy those accounts?
Well,
and
stop and think about something, though.
Yeah.
Just in answer to your question, you can buy whatever you want. It's a matter of what you do with it, the information after you buy it.
Right. But what I'm asking right now is, do they, of course, I can't answer it unless it's, you pull these people in for discovery, you know, to ask them for their company policy or whatever. Maybe they have a policy saying, you know, you need to be a institutional financial blah, blah, blah. And so it's up to, or they pass that responsibility on to the purchaser and, you know, and they release themselves of liability. You know, I'm sure that's what they do. Anything to scoop up a little bit of cash to recoup what they, quote unquote, lost. So, you know, and for all we know, maybe they already recouped a lot of it before they went and sold it that third layer. So I don't know. I don't want to get too much in the weeds with him right now because he was really a little like, wow, no lawyer has. I said, I don't think so, but, you know, your research skills are going to be far superior to mine. And maybe they have, but I don't think so because this guy would be throttled back quite a bit, if not out of business. If a lawyer had taken them on and done what I would like to do with it, really, really slow these people down. And then it's like I've been saying to my friend here in New Hampshire, you know, when you live in the Southwest, I didn't have that problem in San Diego, but friends of mine that I worked with lived in different areas where there were, I mean, San Diego is beautiful there, but there are places where there's cockroaches. And you throw that porch light on, you're going to see those cockroaches run, right? You throw the porch light on, they were up near the threshold of the door, and then all of a sudden, whoosh, they run. So I feel like once I, you know, make a ripple in the waves, and this guy, he's going to be the sacrificial lamb. I mean, he's got himself right out there as the guru. So if we, you know, slay the guru, the other ones are going to go running like a bunch of cockroaches that they are. I know. There's another woman. She wrote a book, and she was doing this before this guy, and all she has for background, I was a soccer mom. Oh, God. So, but anyway, so there's that. I don't know. I'm not going to worry about her, but I'm just going to point out to him. I did have a chance to tell him in that 1 hour. I said, basically speaking, this guy's out there breaking the law, formed a school, and he's teaching people to follow his business plan. And the reason why he opened up that school was to create a pool of buyers, because he's a debt buyer and debt seller and debt collector, and that's all he is. And he calls himself a note buyer. You know, this is the thing, like these people, a note buyer. I've clipped so many clips off YouTube where I'm going to be able to pull this together to send it to this guy, because I want him to see the recordings. You are the bank. I'm teaching you how to be the bank. I'm like, oh boy, this guy's really, he's going to be getting shellacked pretty soon. So I can't make any time now. My thing should be finished pretty soon. I know COVID slowed everything down, so maybe it'll be another year. I don't know. On average, their investigations take 3 years. So, but that was pre-COVID, you know.
Well, and you've done so much of the groundwork already to cut some of that off for him.
Oh, yeah. I told him, I said, listen, I'm invested in the outcome. I'm going to help you guys any way I can. Right before I hung up, we were getting ready to wrap it up. It was about 7 minutes of the hour, you know. And I said, oh, before I get off the phone, I need to tell you, last spring I filled out an FBI complaint. And, you know, it really hasn't gone anywhere, but it's on file. I mean, I filed it in the spring. He said, good. I'm glad you did that. I thought, this is a man that used to work for the Department of Justice. And he's telling me, good.
What was it? Did you file a Title 18? What did you file exactly?
Well, it was 2 pages, as far as, you know, electronically. And on one of the questions, because they ask you a question and then they give you a box below it to type your answer. And one of the questions was, I was kind of on the fence, like, should I do it, should I not, is it going to be worth it, da, 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 da. It said, have you complained to any other government agency? And I said, well, you know, I have filed a complaint with the banking department, so I might as well fill this out. So I did, and off it went into the atmosphere, and I have no idea who's got it or where it is or even if it even exists anymore. I have no idea. They never.
Well,
they
were. Yeah,
I thought that I would have gotten a copy of it in my email or something, but nothing.
It's part of the foundation. It exists. You know, they may ignore it stuff, but
well,
it's like when you
no
send
PPP
stuff to the CFPB, you get a response from them. But even if you don't, it's part of the record. It's part of the foundation. It can be stated that you filed the complaint on such and such a date.
Yeah.
You know,
I sent a text message.
It can't hurt you.
I sent my son a text message to tell him I had just done that. I said, well, your mother just filed a complaint with the FBI.
Well,
our situation.
It may or may not benefit you.
It
may or may not benefit you, but it won't hurt you.
Yeah. But I'm glad I sent him that text message, because I was like, shit, what date did I do that? You know, they didn't send me a copy, you know, and then I found the text message I sent to him, and I said, oh, good, now I know when I did it. So, I mean, usually I'm just so anal about writing everything down, and I didn't, because I basically spent the whole day filling that stuff out, and then I pushed the button, send. It confirmed that it went, but it did say
there. Done that. I can understand that.
Yeah. I told this guy, because he said something, I forget what he said to me. It wasn't anything bad or intense, but he did say, you know, I do reserve the right to, I forget what he said, and it wasn't any big deal. I said, yeah, that's okay. I said, well, since you're mentioning that, I reserve the right to continue on with all the rest of the government agencies that I plan on contacting about my situation. Once I get my decision from the banking department, I'm going to the bar. I'm going to the attorney general. I'm going to the CFPB. I'm going to the U.S. Post Office, Postmaster General down in Boston. I'm going to hire somebody to take me down there because I want to.
That's where we go. Yeah.
Yep, I'm going to go face-to-face down there. I'm just going down there to fill it out. So, because I want to know where my complaint's going, if it's going in a file just to be filed or if you're going to pass it on to someone else, you know. Because what I said to this guy was, and I'm going to talk to the Inspector General of the United States Postal Service in Boston, because this man is sending out, he's using interstate commerce in the United States mail to mail out fraudulent documents, period. He's like, good, very good. You know what I mean? I want him to know that I know some of the terminology, too.
Well, it's wintertime and things are dull, and he might need some fun.
You know what? Honest to God, I said to myself, I called on a Thursday. She called me back an hour later with an appointment. I talked to him the next day. He can't be too busy right now. I mean, maybe I'm just imagining it, you know, but I have not gotten that quick of a response.
Well, it could be, like I said, you've gotten him at a lull in a slow, you know, time when he's not looking at taking a weekend boating vacation or going fishing or something. In the middle of the, you know, the worst part of the winter, February and March, and you might have just caught him at the right time, and it got his attention enough to excite him.
He used the word "I'm excited" twice when we were on the phone.
Wow.
And
the
second time he used it was right before we finished our call. And he said, I love this David and Goliath stuff. It's right up my alley. I was like, oh, my God, this is like sweet words to my ears right now after explaining my situation to people that were just intake people. And I could tell they were not attorneys. And I was like, I don't know if my information is going to be relayed properly. I just didn't feel confident. You know what I mean? I just didn't feel confident. So, but this one made me feel a little bit better.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I was so excited. I was like, I went through all these referrals from other attorneys. I called, New Hampshire Bar does have, and maybe they have this in every state, they have, I think it's the second or third Wednesday of every month, they have what's called Law Line. And if you call in, they put you on hold, and then they'll ask you what you're calling for, and then they'll put you back on hold, and they'll say, hold on just a minute, we're going to try to find an attorney for you to talk to. You get to ask one question. So I have called them a couple of times. I need more referrals. I need more, you know, I keep coming up with dead ends, you know. The worst referrals I got were from the New Hampshire Bar people themselves when you called the office. That's how pathetic it was. And, I mean, two out of three attorneys were like, one guy was like, well, yeah, I could help you right now. I'm super busy. I can't take you on. And this guy was so nice. He never hung up until all my questions were answered. And I tried to get off the phone with him because I felt like I was, you know, jumping into the middle of his day. And the other two were like, I don't know why you're calling me. I got to talk to them because I don't do that kind of I don't do foreclosure stuff, and I don't understand why they referred you to me. But this one girl that I talked to, she didn't want me to hang up. She said, stay on the line with me for a little while. I want to hear what it is you're dealing with. This is interesting. I was like, whoa. And so I ran through it as quickly as I could for her. She wished me luck. I said, her name was Maria. I said, I'm going to write your name down because I noticed when I looked you up before I called you that you deal with estate stuff, and I think my mother needs to talk to somebody. I think she needs, you know, she would do better if it was a female attorney. So, you know, to wrap up her, you know, to get her paperwork properly done. She's 90. She has me on her checking account, but it's really all, she doesn't have any will. And I think that she should have a little one, even though she doesn't have much. I mean, she's got a few bucks, but not a lot. So, anyway.
She definitely should have a will, because otherwise the state is going to handle
it. Yeah. And it's going to go to probate and all that.
And crap. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's not good.
Yep.
So, the state isn't going to do you any favors.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
No. It's not that much. Anyway, so I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, that's good news, and I hope it works out. That you end up with him, because it sounds like a good situation. Keep us informed.
Yeah, and he did tell me, he said, I wanted to let you know, this is my phone. This is my phone number. I don't answer phone calls, but I do participate in text messaging, if that's okay with you. I said, that's A-okay, fine with me. So later, about an hour after I got off the phone with him, I said, oh, darn, I forgot to tell him that in those YouTube videos, this idiot mentioned who his personal attorney is. Personal attorney. So I sent this man a quick message, and I said, oh, by the way, I learned, you know, the person's personal attorney, and his name is blah, blah, blah. And I told him what firm he works for from Philadelphia. And he sent me a message back. He said, thank you for that information. He said, by the way, I wanted to let you know I called the Department of Banking after we got off the phone and left them a message to call me.
Cool.
He told me, he said, I can get a condensed, like, I forget what he called it, like a condensed, a shortened thing, a status about what they've discovered in your situation so far.
Yeah. What they're doing and what they have found.
I told him, I know, you know, it's a process of waiting for them, but, you know, their average orders I read on their website are 3 years long. And so after we talked about that, he said, oh, I wanted to let you know, I don't really fully agree with what you said. There is a certain amount of information that you can get from the Department of Banking, and I'll take, you know, I'm going to take care of that for you.
If you know how to get it, and he does. So.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. When I first read his bio, I went, if I want a turbo trip to the Attorney General, I get this guy to help me. If I want to, you know what I mean? He could just pick up the phone and talk turkey with all these people that he
used
to work with.
That's known as inroads.
Yeah. So I think that might be worth the money.
Yeah. Yeah, we want you to have all the inroads you can find, not detours.
Yeah, and I will have to inform him about this person, and I'm more than happy to do it, but somebody else I would probably have to work doubly hard to inform them about what's going on. This guy's going to already know. Like, I have not studied the federal level banking laws and the violations there. I have not looked at it because I've been so busy trying to just hack away at the state level stuff that I want somebody to just take that over. I don't want any part of it.
Well, that's not a kiddie pool to dive into in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, he's litigating.
Even at state level.
And I told him, I said, you know, because He said something about this guy. I said, look, I'm not trying to be a wise ass here, but I settling out of court with somebody like this is not going to solve the problem. The problem is he's out there doing this to other people. He forecloses on 8 to 10% of the account. He needs to be shut down. in whatever states are like New Hampshire that have decent laws, because if you're in Missouri, you're screwed. There's hardly anything there. Nothing. Nothing there. And I mean, and there's some other states that are kind of weak in their laws, and then there's some states that are better than where I live, and then there's some states. Hey, I was looking at North Carolina. Perhaps you know this, but if a company is nailed for debt collection activities in the state of North Carolina, it's a Class 1 felony. And if this guy's operating in North Carolina, Class 1 felony for him right there, just on the debt collection level.
You mean illegal debt collection?
Yeah.
Not entitled to collect in the state.
He doesn't have a debt collection license in any state that I could find. None.
Well, they have some pretty strong consumer protections.
You know, the reason why I looked up North Carolina is because I thought this guy was in North Carolina, and he's in South Carolina. In fact, he's about an hour from that Murdoch place, you know, whole thing where that estate, that hunting estate got sold recently this week. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, we are after 10 o'clock again.
Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. So, he's out there, and by the way, Dave, he's still out there now with a flashlight and a floodlight on his back of his house, adding to his work of art on the shed in the dark. I just was walking around and noticed out the front door. Anyway, thank you, everyone. And thank you, Dave, as always, for helping out with your call every week. And we will say good night. And we'll see you next Thursday. Have a wonderful week and weekend.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend. And just keep your eye open for things around you. Be aware of your surroundings. Good night.
Absolutely. Good night.